You're listening to the Post-Apocalyptic Media Podcast.
Hello and welcome back to the Post-Apocalyptic Media Podcast. I am your host, Sean, senior editor here at Post-Apocalyptic Media, and this is episode number 81. Now, this week we have quite a bit of news about Walking Dead. You know, it seems like every week I have some news about The Walking Dead. Well, the San Diego Comic-Con happened last Friday, and the panel revealed quite a bit. I mean, there's some really good news here for fans and people who have maybe not even been fans for a long time, you know, maybe have skipped out for the lack of a certain star, right? Namely Rick. So we have some good news on that front. But let's get into some kind of, you know, a little bit lighter stuff first. We'll build up to that big news here at the end. So we have an article on this site, which I'm very excited about. It's an article about survival. It's called Basic Survival Fire and Shelter. It covers kind of the basic things you need to learn about shelter and fire and kind of how to build those things up and how to when we're in the situation where we need to use them. How to do that. Now, as a side note here, before I get into this, I just wanted to say, I am personally, you know, I love post-apocalyptic media. I'm talking about the media. I'm not talking about the site, which I do love, of course, but I'm talking about media itself. I love movies and TV and comic books and books and games and all this stuff in that genre. I just love it. That's why I'm here. That's why I'm doing this, right? But I would say even stronger affection I have is for survival stuff. Anything from, you know, camp gadgets. I actually have a YouTube channel called Camp Gadget Reviews, which I haven't updated in probably over a year. And, the gadget side of things and also just the primitive bushcrafting stuff. I love that stuff. I have a good friend who runs a survival school near me, and I've been through a lot of his classes just kind of, you know, as a friend, and it's amazing the stuff, you know, as far as not only the, you know, the shelter and fire stuff, but also the foraging and learning about mushrooms and learning about what plants to eat, what plants to avoid. And it's the crazy thing to me, and this is what gets me, I guess, most interested, is the fact that it's different in so many different areas. You know, for those of you out there who know I'm a farmer, I have a little tiny farm, 6 acres, and I do a lot of farming, and a lot of farmers tend to fight against natural plants. You know what I mean? They call them weeds. I prefer to call them, native plants. That's what they are. They're just fighting to regain the soil and knock your tomatoes down. And it's not their fault, right? So I really enjoy as a farmer, I'm kind of split. I have the hatred of these native plants killing my tomatoes, but also a love and respect for these native plants and medicinal uses for them and the nutritional uses for a lot of them. It's amazing. It's amazing stuff. And I grew up thinking I had to just, you know, eliminate these and pull them. And I would never spray them. Spraying is really, really bad. But you know what I mean? We're always taught those are weeds. Well, from that aspect of it, from the native plants to your area, to building fire and shelter, this is all, I think, a really important part of surviving. And surviving, of course, is a really important part of the apocalypse. You know what I mean? They all go hand in hand. This is all, it's all connected, right? So I just wanted to say that as far as my personal interest in survival stuff. Now, this article here was written by Bailey Higgins. And Bailey Higgins is a author. She has written dozens of books. I don't even know. I'm looking at her Amazon page and it's just packed with all kinds of books. Most of it is fiction, but there's also, you know, a strong element of survival tactics in her books, which is great. You know what I mean? So she has been writing survival type articles here on the website, which I always love reading. I love this kind of stuff. So this one here, all about fire and shelter. She goes through the steps. She goes through, you know, how to find and make a shelter. Here are some steps to take. Anything from how she explains, for if you're going to make a shelter, you want to do it without expending too much energy, right? That's important. You don't want to sit there and go crazy. I mean, when you saw, there's a way to saw when you have a handsaw where you're not just killing yourself. There's, you know, you go in long strokes where you're doing it as efficiently as possible. Anyway, so that's just an example. She talks about tools, how to use something like a simple folding knife. It's a great article. I think you should definitely check it out. And especially this is where it's all my whole little rant here is well, not really rant, but you know what I mean? It's kind of coming full circle. She's a fiction author, and she also knows quite a bit about survival techniques. So, you know, if you're looking for, and this sounds like a commercial, I swear it's not a commercial, but if you're looking for fiction, post-apocalyptic fiction that also has a strong element of survival information in it, you know, look no further than her books. I think that's a pretty much a given. Now, she has her Amazon page. I'll link to this article. It actually has a link in there to her Amazon page where you can check out. Again, not a commercial, but I just highly respect her writing and the fact that she has so much. She actually calls her stories a post-apocalyptic survival collection for this one series that she did. But again, she has tons of books that she's written. So check that out. I hope to do a lot more, you know, survival stuff on the site. I think it's, I think it goes hand in hand, like I've said, you know, with people who are interested in the media side of things, the fiction side of things, the movies, you know, I think there's also an element of being curious about how to actually survive, right? How to actually survive in an apocalyptic situation. And it doesn't even have to be, you know, a zombie apocalypse. It doesn't have to be a nuclear war. Everything has its own kind of solution, you know, for survival. But it's just important to know emergency preparedness, I think, more than anything. So anyway, and, you know, going hand in hand with that also, this week's YouTube Roundup, I always do a YouTube Roundup every Wednesday, and it's usually, you know, short films and stuff like that that has to do with the apocalypse, post-apocalyptic, you know, even like audiobooks, all that. Well, this week I decided to do survival, a survival edition. I just found this kick. It might be Bailey's article. I don't know. But so I did all survival videos. Check that out when you get a chance if you're into that. You know, bushcrafting, shelter building, cooking, which is, I'm a big fan of eating cooking. So that's that. But and then there's one video in there actually about gadgets and some really helpful camping gadgets, which is really cool. So anyway, let's get on to more news. Now, this is some crazy news. This is about a chess robot in Russia who broke a 7-year-old child's finger because the child went out of order on his turn during a chess match. You know, when I saw this, Stephanie actually brought it up to my attention. And when I saw this, I was like, well, that's crazy. You know, it might have just been a malfunction. Well, so you watch this game. Let me give you some backstory. So this robot is basically a robot arm. It looks like, you know, the claw game at the local pizza place, right? It's a claw arm, and it's in the middle of this table, and there are chess boards all around it. It looks like on this video, it looks like there are three around it. So there are three opponents playing against this robot arm, right? And from what I understand, the video clip is very short, but from what I understand, the way this works is the robot takes a turn around the table. It takes a turn at this one, and then when it's done with its turn, it goes to the next one, while the human, and in this case, it's their children. I think they're all under 9. It's like an under 9 league for Russian chess. They take their turns while the robot is going around to each other board, right? So it's an advanced machine. It's programmed to do this. These things have been around for a long time. And officials are saying this is the first time this has happened. In the video, you can see the child reaches his hand up while the robot arm is actually still taking its turn, or I think it took its turn, but it's not done yet. It hasn't, like, you know, finished the process of being of its turn, you know, of being done. So the robot arm grabs the kid's hand and breaks his finger. So, so here are my thoughts on this, right? Number one, why aren't there safeguards against this? I think that, from what the official said, that this is something that the child knew about. He was warned about not to mess with the robot while it's taking its turn. Wait until it's completely done, and then you can take your turn. Well, the kid, you know, you've seen chess matches between humans. They're intense. They go back and forth, and so, I mean, sometimes, right? in some turns, they'll make a move. The next person will make a move. The next person will make a move. So they can go a little more quickly, right? Well, this one, the child didn't really, I mean, it's a 7-year-old kid. I've had 4 7-year-olds in my life, and I know that they are, well, first of all, they don't, you know, always listen. Second of all, they don't always retain the rules, right? It's not, they're 7. So I think the kid kind of messed up by not waiting his turn, by, you know, being eager to get in there. Totally understandable, right? The Russian officials, though, of course, are blaming the child. They're saying that the kid knew about the safety protocols and defied them. People are saying that the kid actually continued playing after this, that he went back and he continued some matches after this. So it wasn't a huge deal, which I hate to say it, but, you know, Russia, am I right? I think Russia is probably... It's probably a different standard, I would say, than most of us in the West are used to. So this kid went back. He kept going. But his parents were like, you know what? I think we're still going to seek some legal counsel on this. We're still... I don't know how that's going to go. But it feels like they're... I mean, understandably, right? If this happened in America, I can't even imagine. I mean, that whole place would be shut down. There'd be... it'd be a madhouse. But the other thing I wanted to say about this craziness of this robot grabbing this kid's hand was it seemed like it grabbed his hand for a little too long, you know, like it's making its moves and it's making swift little moves and it's moving the pieces around. So you would think that a chess robot arm would not need to grip chess pieces so hard that it would break them, right? It's, you know, it's a little dainty pickup and it moves over here and it moves over here. That's it. Just enough to pick up a little lightweight couple ounce chess piece and move it over here. Well, for it to have that much force to break a child's finger, what was going on there? You know what I mean? And also it stopped. I think I said that, but it just stopped. It's moving around, constantly moving around. It's ready to go to the next board probably. It's a really fast process where it goes around the entire table. Well, it grabbed his hand and stopped, and it just broke his hand, his finger. I don't know. Do I say that the robot uprising has begun? Do I dare say the obvious? I don't know. I think that it's scary. It's definitely a scary thing. I don't know if there's going to be accountability. I don't know what's going to happen. You know, we probably won't even hear anything else about this, to be honest. But it's still scary. It's still anytime that there's robots kind of, you know, rising up against humans, it's news you're going to find on post-apocalyptic media. I feel like it was being a little vindictive, like teaching the kid a lesson, like since the kid went out of order and kind of was taking his turn. It almost was like someone who just grabbed his hand and was like, no, and just, you know, went a little too far. So it's scary. We'll see how this plays out. But I wanted to talk about that because it's some crazy news. I love covering crazy news on this site. All right. Next little bit of news is about the game Stray. Now, this is a game about cats, right? It's a game about a cat, mostly. You play as a cat and you run around this post-apocalyptic area, there's a couple different cities, a couple different areas you're running around, and you're solving puzzles, right? But in addition to that, you're also knocking clay pots off of roofs, and you're scratching on the rugs and the furniture, and you're cuddling up to the legs of robots. So it's a very accurate cat simulator. I love it. I think it's a brilliant game. It has taken off. Like, it has just become it's a little indie game, and it's become such a phenomenon. It's really cool. I'm excited about seeing it. You know, we've been talking about this game since year and a half ago, I guess. Almost 2 years ago. Yeah. So it's pretty exciting to see how successful this small little team has been, right? But the thing that interests me here in this most recent article I wrote about this is that there are modders on Nexus Mods who are they're reskinning the main character, who's a tabby cat, looks like an orange tabby, and they are reskinning it with other types of cats, right? Other breeds. There's calico and Siamese and you know, all the gray cats and all this stuff. They're reskinning it, and not only are they doing it for like their own cats, they're also taking requests. So people are commenting on these mods and saying, hey, can you do one for my cat? It's whatever, you know, this certain specific species and you know, type of cat. And so they're reskinning these cats to be custom requests. Very cool, right? Someone even made a Garfield one. You remember Garfield? I grew up with Garfield. You know, the fat cat who loves lasagna and hates Mondays. You know that one? So I think it's cool. Actually, someone even made a puppy. They made a puppy mod. So I think it's cool that people are modding this game, and that's what mods are supposed to be for. You know what I mean? Like, there are mods that cheat and break the game for you and give you unlimited health and all that stuff. Nah. I like the mods like in Fallout and those types of games where you can have like a reskin. You can add maybe features that the devs didn't think of, maybe, or didn't have time to add in. That's what the modding community is for, right? And this is a perfect example of how that works out well. So I thought that was a cool little story. People all over Twitter, all over, you know, social media are talking about this, and they're posting photos of their own cats. In the article header, I put a photo of a calico I think that's a tuxedo cat, who is wearing the harness, you know, wearing the same, kind of has the same, I mean, it is the same character model, but just reskinned, and it's done so well. It's really, really cool. So if you have a cat that you would like, you know, honored, I guess, in this way, and that's another thing they're doing, is actually they're doing cats that have passed away and they're adding them in here. If that's something you're interested in, check out Nexus Mods, check out Stray, do a search for Stray, do a search for, you know, cat skin mods. And most of the mods in Stray are all cat skin, so just check that out. Alrighty, let's go on to this next little bit here. I wrote an article called The Top 10 Post-Apocalyptic Movie Car Chase Scenes. I was really happy with this. I had a lot of fun writing this article. I originally started writing it to be a top 10 car movies, you know, just post-apocalyptic car movies in general. But it got to the point where I thought, you know what, there are scenes in some of these movies that it would be cooler to have the actual scenes themselves. That way I can put YouTube videos in there of the clips and you can just check it out yourself without having to go through and watch the entire movie or whatever. So here's my list. I have Death Race 2000, which is the 1975 classic. Now, the only reason this is number 10, it's a great movie. The only reason it's number 10 really is because the car, it is post-apocalyptic. The cars are not really evolved into the point where even 4 years later, George Miller was making some incredible, post-apocalyptic cars. And then, of course, 6 years later, you know, we have Road Warrior, which completely redefined what post-apocalyptic cars look like, and especially car chases, right? So Death Race 1975 version is number 10. Great movie. Check it out. Sylvester Stallone. And then I have Number 9 is Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome. Now, you're thinking, why is a Mad Max movie all the way back at number 9? Well, Thunderdome, it's like I point out in the article, I say, you know, I think George Miller already used up all of his cool car chase ideas by this time. And, you know, I'm going to sound like a total old man. I'm going to sound like a total Gen Xer here. But the truth is, there are so many movies in the 80s, especially the early 80s, that by the time they got to the third movie, they turned it into a kid's show. They turned it in, you know, people have said Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome is the Return of the Jedi of the Mad Max franchise. And I can see that. I love both. I love Thunderdome and I love Jedi. But it got a little wacky. And you can see that in this scene. It's a scene where they are on a train. And there's train cars and there's cars all around it chasing them. And then this one guy, he's hanging from an arm off the side of the train and he's like almost hitting things with his feet and he's lifting his feet up. And every time he's going, whoa, it's like, oh, come on. It's just so wacky. You know what I mean? But anyway, that's why it's number 9. Still a great scene, but it got a little weird. Doomsday is next. That's 2008. Great movie. I love Doomsday. The whole idea of Doomsday is great. This car chase is British cars. You see a Bentley, you see an old Jaguar, and that in itself makes it great, you know, and unique. But it's also a modern car being chased by a bunch of, you know, what you would say Mad Max cars, you know, hides and furs and bones and metal scraps, like all, you know, attached to it, chasing after this modern car. So that's a lot of fun. Terminator 3 is the next one I have on this list. Rise of the Machines. Great scene. See, it's kind of hard picking my favorites here, but, you know, I had to put it in some kind of order. Terminator 3, Rise of the Machines. This is the one where the Terminator is driving a crane truck and she turns the crane sideways and while she's driving. And so the crane is just knocking down everything, all the parked cars and poles and everything on each side of the street as she's driving by. It's great, great scene. Of course, she's chasing Arnold. He's on a bike, which he was in Terminator 2. Same thing, being chased by a semi, which I'll talk about that one in a second. The next one is Mad Max, the original from 1979. Now, this one, it's like right in the middle of my list. What is my deal? I thought this was my favorite movie of all time. Well, it is, or at least it's, you know, close. But this, I mean, this car chase scene is iconic. But it's not as, I mean, it's a low budget car chase scene, right? It's not as crazy as some of the other ones on this list. So for that reason, I made it go down a couple notches. Still, as I point out in the article, it's one of the most quotable car chase scenes. You know, I'm the Knight Rider, right? All that stuff. Roop and the way he, when Charlie caught the saucepan in his throat, right? And Roop's like, calling about it, and then he, you know, later Charlie had to get the voice box and say, oh, I don't see the interceptor anyway. So that's a great scene, great quotes in that one, love it. The action is incredible, great cars, everything has all the elements, but it's just not as crazy, only because it's a low budget thing. I mean, there was one scene, one part where the Knight Rider's car goes through a camper van, right? Smashes right through it. That's actually George Miller's camper van that they use, like his old one. And he's like, well, I don't have the budget to buy a new one, so we're going to use mine and just destroy it. So that, you know, that's kind of cool, little stuff like that. All right, next one is Terminator 2, Judgment Day, 1991. This came out when I was 15. I think I was 15 when this came out. Loved it. It's a great memory for me watching this movie. You know, people waited a long time for Terminator 2. I think Terminator 1, I think, came out in 84, 85, somewhere around there. And they waited several years to see Terminator 2. It was a big deal. This chase scene is, it's amazing. Robert Patrick's T-1000. He's driving a Freightliner a semi, and he jumps down, down to the canal. Down below, there's in San Fernando Valley flood canals, which if you've ever played like Grand Theft Auto 5, There's a lot of that stuff in there, the, you know, the flood canals. So jumps down off the bridge down to the lower level and just keeps driving. It's a great scene. It was in all the previews of the movie. I remember that so vividly. So yeah, I really like that scene. Death Race 2008, the 2008 version with Jason Statham was a great. Now the movie wasn't that great. I'll say that. And that's another reason why it's, you know, I mean, it's up there on my list, but it's a great scene. The cars are amazing. The semi that, you know, they have the dreadnought they bring out, and it has some gun turrets on it shooting at Jason Statham's character and all his opponents. They're racing. It's called Death Race. So this thing is brought out to kind of take out a few of the opponents. It's a great, and like I point out here in the article, if you've ever played the game Crossout, this is like a live action Crossout. Crossout's a great game, very much like this entire movie. So yeah, I love that scene. Great, great chase scene. Now, the next one I have is Duel from 1971. Now, you might be thinking, now, Sean, Duel is not a post-apocalyptic movie. Well, it isn't. It's actually a movie about a guy who's driving through the desert. I think he takes a route through the desert, through the California desert. I forgot why. It's been a long time since I saw it. It's like a sales trip or something like that. And he gets harassed by a semi-truck it's kind of like a road rage situation, right? Well, this semi harasses him the entire time through the desert, smashes up his car. The final scene, like before the car blows up, is great because you have this old Dodge Duster. I think it's a Duster. Maybe it's a Dart. Being harassed by the semi. That semi is incredible, first of all, right? It's a Peterbilt 281 tanker truck, and it looks like it came out of Mad Max. Like, it looks like the same one that was in Road Warrior. And so that semi is chasing this guy around, harassing him, smashing up his car, driving the guy crazy. The background is all desert. I mean, if you didn't know the background of the story, if you started watching it during the chase scenes, you would think it was a post-apocalyptic movie, right? So this final scene I put in there because it's kind of the most post-apocalyptic. That semi's going a little crazy. The car's all smashed up. It looks very, very, very cool. I really love it. All right. And my second choice here is Fury Road. Now, you might be saying, Sean, why is it not number one? Well, it was tough trying to decide between this and my number one, which you can probably guess by now. But there's one scene in particular in Fury Road that I really love because I'm a big fan of the Rock Riders. I even made a Rock Rider costume a couple years back. I think it was right after the movie came out. And I went to Dragon Con and, you know, got all these photos made with it and all that stuff. And I have just such an appreciation for that costume. It's so well done. The whole aesthetic of these guys with, you know, very tribal looks riding on dirt bikes. Very cool. So this scene is the dirt bike wielding Rock Riders chasing after Charlize Theron's character, of course, Furiosa. And there's some great aerial stunts in here. These guys were actually motocross riders. These guys who did the stunts in this, they're professional motocross riders. So it's very authentic, very cool. There's lots of aerial stunts. There's lots of jumping, and it's very, you know, it's really cool. And then there's also in the middle of it, you see Rictus Erectus, this giant monster truck, which is such a beautiful machine. That thing jumps, it does a sweet jump like right in the middle of this whole chase scene. It's great. It's a great, great scene. There are so many great, the whole movie is a car chase scene, right? And there are so many great ones. Like, there's the ones where Nux is jumping up on the car. You know, there's the one where the guy is spitting gas directly into the intake on the engine to get it to go faster, which wouldn't actually work because you have a gas, you know, fuel to air ratio. But anyway, so it's some great stuff. I love that scene. I decided to put that in there as number two. Now, number one, you may have guessed it, is Mad Max the Road Warrior. Now, before you say anything, I can't hear you anyway. The reason I like this one so much is it's Well, number one, it's so iconic to me. I remember this as a child. We watched this, me and my friend watched this every weekend, just about. And we just love The Road Warrior. It's such a great movie. But that the chase scene with the semi, he's trying to get the tanker, you know, out of there. And all the marauders, you know, the raiders are chasing him. And they're jumping on the truck. There's so much. There's drama. There's all this stuff going on while this truck is trying to make it down the road. And they're all trying to kill Max as he's driving. And, you know, by the end of it, he is beaten up. I mean, there's a scene where the shotgun shell goes out on the hood. And what's his name? The feral kid goes out there to get it. And then Wes pops his head up. And, you know, it's a great scene. So many memorable moments from it. We see so many iconic characters meet their death, like Lord Humongous, and, you know, spoiler alert. And it's just a great scene. It's I would definitely say it's the best. I think Fury Road did an amazing job at kind of recreating the intensity of that. But 1981, it still has it. Road Warrior still has it. I think it's number one in my book. So, what do you think? Do you agree with that? Do you disagree? Is there some other movie that I forgot that you could throw in there? Now, I didn't. There are some movies that I didn't put in because it's only a top 10. Some movies that I'd left off. But let me know. Let me know what you think, if you agree with this list or not. And here we go. This is the last bit of news. This is the exciting news regarding The Walking Dead. At San Diego Comic-Con, they announced a Rick and Michonne spinoff. Now, I talk about spinoffs probably in every one of these episodes of this podcast, especially, you know, Walking Dead spinoffs. It's a big thing now, you know? They have so many spinoffs from the Walking Dead universe. I could sit here and name them all, but I'll forget half of them. So this is a big deal, not only because it means that we will see Rick and Michonne back together again in the Walking Dead universe in a series. It also means that they have confirmed that they're not doing the Rick Grimes trilogy movies. They've scrapped that idea. They probably did the research and found out that, hey, you know, the money's not really in blockbuster movies. Or it probably is, but, you know, there's more risk, I think, in blockbuster movies, especially now with theaters being the way they are. And who knows, anytime, you know, we could have another coronavirus outbreak, at least to the point where they're closing theaters again. I mean, I think that they took all that into consideration and they said, you know what, let's just do a TV show and let's just do, because that's worked well for us for, what, 12 years now. And let's not try to reinvent the wheel. Let's just bring Rick and Michonne out, have their own spinoff, see how that goes. So it's great news, I think. I'm not one of those people who thinks that Rick is, you know, the be all end all, but I really, you know, I liked his character. I thought it was interesting. I thought it added a lot to it. He was the leader, you know, he was the guy who had so much loss, you know, and so much stuff going on, and we got to follow his story. And now it's to the point where we have a lot of new people and we're like, do I care about this person? I forgot. So it's nice to have that kind of constant in there. So it's like an old friend seeing Rick and Michonne. So very cool. So they have, this article has a couple videos in it from Comic-Con that shows when they made the announcement and people went insane. Very, very cool news. So check out this article. Stephanie wrote up about that. We also have, as always, we have lots more content than I talk about on this podcast. This is kind of, you know, my favorites, I guess, the highlights, I guess. We have more news about Westworld. We have more news about, Alone, we have the review and recap. Tina is on Season 9, Episode 9 right now. There's also the Westworld Season 4, Episode 5 review. For, you know, something for you to check out. Like I said, I have my YouTube roundup, which is all survival videos this week. So there's a lot more on the site to check out. There's the news on Attack on Titan, of course. More news from Comic-Con. There was a lot more stuff going on for the from that. So check it out. all the latest. We try to stay on top of the latest and greatest news that has to do with anything from post-apocalyptic to survival to any kind of media you can think of that has to do with those things. So good times. So thanks everyone for listening to me talk here about my favorite stuff. I literally just talk about this all the time. I just happen to press record and you get to listen to this little segment here. but I thank you all for listening. This has been great. And I will see you or talk to you next time. But until then, remember to stay alive out there and always be ready for the big one. Bye-bye.